Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host, and I want to thank you so much for joining us here on the program. It's great to have you with us every Sunday at 7 a.m. and p.m., Monday mornings at 1 a.m., and we also stream live at richarddugan.com, as well as archiving these programs at richarddugan.com, the radio shows page. And we encourage you, we implore you to go to our guests' website, gather some information. I mean, nowadays, even if an individual doesn't have a website, they have a presence of some sort. And we would encourage you to check them out and just see what they have to offer. Sometimes you're going to find something unexpected. It could really, I don't know, could open up your life to something really, really extraordinary. So I would highly recommend that you check out our guests, and we encourage you to do so. You know, I had an opportunity some time ago to interview, believe it or not, my parents, and it was extraordinary because of the fact that I was able to go through the process of learning about them as well as things that they thought about and the people that they associated with. And I just found it extraordinary. These people are, yes, my parents, but they are, I don't see them as parents anymore. And maybe that's, as we get older, we don't see our parents that way. Well, we're going to sort of talk about that, and I want to share a little piece with you here, folks, something that I used within the context of that interview, which is by request, not for public consumption, so it's not available at this time. Maybe I'll get permission later. But in the context of discussing the associations that my parents had over their lifetime, and they're in their 80s now, I asked them about the people that they knew, the friends that they had, and how important they were. And that's kind of the subject of today's program. And this is basically a little piece of what I came up with. And we're going to play that for you right here.
Friends, I will remember you, think of you, pray.
All right, so friends, we're going to talk a little bit about that today, and my special guest on the phone, actually on Skype today, we're going to be coming from the Skype connection here with the author of not only an extraordinary book, but a concept, The Invisible Bones. Sarah Lovett is my guest, and Sarah, I want to thank you so much for joining us on the program.
That's lovely to be here. Thank you for having me.
The whole concept of friends. People know about this term these days in the 21st century, in this technological age. When you talk about friends, you're not talking about someone you've known for 5 or 10 or 15. My best friend I've known since sixth grade, okay?
Yeah.
I'm 57, and I've known him since sixth grade. Now, we haven't stayed as close as I would have liked. I moved, and he moved, and so on and so forth. But we've been friends. But now you have this social media thing where you can, quote unquote, friend someone. I'm not on social media. I do have a Twitter account. I don't have a Facebook account. I'm not on Instagram or any of the other deals, primarily because I just don't have the time. But what is so extraordinary, Sarah, is that unlike you and me here, establishing and fostering what I would consider to be a friendship of sorts, I don't see that on the internet. And this is sort of an interesting way in to what you discovered, some of the things that the whole reason for all of this. Tell me about your understanding and maybe more specifically definition of a friend.
Well, yes, you're right. It's friendship is evolving into a different definition, I think. I think we're all defining it differently, to where the word friend, we have to find a new word for friend, and what that is, I'm not quite sure. Because Facebook opens a world, but it also, I think, closes a world off, in that we have an appearance of being more social when we are just sort of retreating into ourselves with all of those people inside a machine. And I think social media extends to friendship, but it extends to friends that we already had. It isn't friendship itself. I think it connects us to those friends and to new people coming in, but it's not connection. And because there are so many of them in this hive, it is a community, and it has a feeling of social, but it isn't socializing. So I think it's, to me, it's a gathering place. Friendship to me is flesh, it's presence, it's looking someone in the eye, it's knowing that person's story on a level to where it's weaving into your own, and you're connecting with the other person, and you are sharing in that moment of the story that you have to tell and the story they have to tell, which is what I found on the journey that I went on. It was extraordinary to see people I hadn't seen for 30, 35 years, and to sit around a table, for instance, with the girls I used to walk to school with when I lived in England. We hadn't seen each other since we were 16. And to sit at that table and still connect, like it was about, you know, a week or so had gone by, and we'd been in some sort of experiment where we were all brought back together to find out what life had done to us. And it was extraordinary, the amount of things we shared in common, the joys that we hadn't expected, also the grief that had come upon us. But to just interact with them, to say through an email or a text or something, that connection would not be what it was with us all being present with each other for the first time in so long, just sitting down with one another and truly understanding who each other were. And I think that's friendship. Friendship is showing up for people. It's going out of your way when it's not convenient. It's being completely present for someone when they are in a path of joy, or if they're in a path of loss or being lost. It's someone that doesn't judge. But for me, it does all come back to presence.
And you embarked on a journey. Now, you talk about people you hadn't seen for 30 years.
Yes.
But these weren't the only people that you saw on this particular journey. First of all, tell us, how long did this journey take, this travel?
I took a year out of my life. So my birthday is June 1st. So I traveled June 1st to June 1st. So I took 365 days to do it. I was feeling very disconnected in myself and with my friends who are, you know, completely scattered far and wide. So I decided I would just take a year and get to know them again, get to know who we are with each other. And I used Facebook as a sort of starting block. And the friends I had on Facebook were people I knew that I'd interacted with. There weren't any strangers or any people I hadn't met. So these were all people that had formerly been in my life. And there were 166 of them. And I managed to meet with 156 of them. And the 10 that I didn't see, I have since seen. It was just, it didn't work out timing-wise for them. But it was interesting to me that no one said no, which I thought was fantastic. You know, I would email them or text them or message them and say, this is what I'm doing. I'm going to travel up from Dallas, which is where I live. I'm going to travel up the East Coast, all the way from Florida, all the way up to Massachusetts and back down through the Carolinas, New Orleans or so. Then I would go to Europe, and then I would travel up the West Coast from here all the way to Phoenix, all the way up to Tacoma and Chicago, Minneapolis. So it was who was along the way, and we just sort of figured it out. It's tremendous.
Very interesting. And I find it, first of all, I think it's great. I have to say that one of the reasons, and it was a sad reason why, I just couldn't stay on Facebook. I was getting enough bad news as it was from the news, okay? But one of the reasons that I couldn't stay on Facebook was because of a piece of news about one of my mentors who I listened to as a kid growing up on the radio. And I remember seeing the post that described in moderate detail his murder-suicide with he and it. Well, I shouldn't say that it was a sort of a mutual suicide with the husband and wife in a hotel room in Scottsdale, Arizona. And I'm going, what would possess a human being to go that far? And not to mention the fact that why would he, this guy whose voice is just bouncing around in my head, who I listened to for decades, what happened, you know, and so on and so forth. And it broke my heart. I just, you know, in terms of both the sadness of why he did it, why they did it, I should say, but also the sadness of losing this incredible voice, this incredible talent, incredible person. I mean, there wasn't a single person who could say a bad thing, if you will, about him. And we all have our dark sides, and I know he did too. And this is where it came up. But that hit me really hard. I don't want to get news like this.
It is immediate when that happened to me on my journey when I was in Oregon. I reached for Facebook as you do in the morning and was looking at some friends' posts, and my best friend's friend had posted about how his best friend had just died, who happened to me, my best friend's husband, and that's how I found out her husband had died a few hours before. And it did two things to me. I was thankful because I immediately got on the phone and was able to connect with her and talk to her and say, I'm getting on a plane and I'll be there in a few days. So it was immediate enough for me to take immediate action and be where I needed to be. But in and of myself, it was like you just said, it was like someone punched me in the face, as it was just news that was completely unexpected. And heartbreaking, and I knew it was going to completely redefine my closest and dearest friend's life. But I was thankful for it in the way that it gave me the complete immediacy of being able to act on it when I knew it.
Sure.
Whereas I don't know how long it would have taken me otherwise. I'm sure she would have phoned me at some point, but I was able to just sort of jump into the situation and take that on. But I think that's what's happening. I think that's what's happening in all different facets of the way we live our lives now. It's much more immediate than it has been because it's right there all the time. Everything you need to know, everything you don't need to know, everything you don't want to know. So you have to, it's a beast that you have to tame for yourself. Like for me, I have my Facebook organized to where I only see certain people's news. So if it's something horrible, it's something that they need to say and necessary to say, and that I would welcome knowing, as opposed to a news stream that's telling me the latest political situation, which might make my blood pressure go up.
Yeah.
I don't want that in my life, so I choose not to have that. But it's interesting, it's fascinating to me that we are in this position in society where we have to do that. We have to choose our own navigation. And it's great that there's all of this news out there and that we can have all this access and that there's I feel like there's a community coming out of it now, especially in the political situation we see ourselves in today. It's caused people to come to action. And I think Facebook is like a meeting point. It's like, you know, when your kids with your parents and they say, okay, well, at 5 p.m. we're going to meet right by the by the red building over there. I think Facebook is that red building, and we all come back into it and we all meet there and say, okay, what can we do? What are we doing? And it facilitates conversation and openness and a drive to connect in a way that we can come together with the exchange ideas and then go off into our own societies, go off into our own communities to be with one another, to enact all of the ideas and the closeness that we've found in a connection that is completely absent physically, but can spur us on mentally. So I do think there's some good coming out of it.
I have to say that my method of staying in touch, for example, text messaging. Yeah. My family has set up a group. And anytime something's going on that's of real importance, and we're talking probably more medical issues than anything else, boom, a text message goes out and everybody responds to it and so forth. And it's like, okay, that's our social media. Plus the fact that it's private. Yeah. I mean, I know that there are settings in Facebook. My wife happens to be on Facebook, which sometimes drives me a little crazy because she asks me, how do you do this and how do you do that? And I say, I don't know. Because I'm not on Facebook. I mean, you know, I can play with it and see if I can figure it out for you, but, yeah. You know, it's like if someone came to me and said, can you rebuild a Lamborghini? No. Don't even know where to start. And to me, Facebook is like a Lamborghini. Or actually, it could be any car, because it doesn't matter. But you, and I know a lot of people, have made peace with all of this and have turned this into something that can really be of benefit. And I'm just curious as to maybe we can talk just a little bit here about the deeper aspects of this as you began your journey, this 365-day journey, in terms of the spiritual impact on you as a person, as a being here on the planet. And the necessity you felt for taking this journey and physically connecting with these people that you had, in many instances, only connected with virtually on the internet through social media.
Yes, I mean, at the time I was 46 years old when I embarked on it, and it was a time when I was feeling disconnected from my life and going through a sort of a, I don't like the words crisis, midlife crisis, more of a shift, I suppose, where you're sort of reevaluating. And I didn't feel like I was living a potential that I could. There wasn't a level of happiness that I had in my life that spanned everything that I thought it should. So I was also frustrated with being disconnected from my friends, when people that I wanted to reach out to, I would phone, which is great. And some people still pick up the phone. A lot of people don't. Texting for me it's fine. It doesn't really fulfill anything for me. So I was feeling all of this disconnection, and I just started to reach out to them and say, would you be open to my coming out to seeing you? I know we haven't seen each other in a long time. And that's sort of how it began. And always when you go on these journeys, it's never for the reason that you think. we think we're in control, but we rarely are. So connecting with them again and being with them, it was extraordinary how many of our stories wove through each other's. We'd connected to the same experiences, gone through the same things. And sitting with a friend of mine, who I talk about in the book, Viola, she had experienced suicide. Her 15-year-old son had taken his own life. And it was 6 years before I arrived. So she was still, obviously, that never passes over you. It's just a matter of accepting it a moment at a time. So it was still very raw for her. But she was working through different things that, for me, the timing of my being there when I was there it was golden. I think all time is golden. We all show up when we need to for people. But the exchange I had with her, it couldn't have been done through a text. It couldn't have been done even on the phone, really. It's something that you have to look into someone's eyes to see. And it's only in those shadow moments that we share with each other, I think, that we have the courage to go into a deep reflection inside of ourselves as well. And that brought different memories back up for me that I had suppressed. And that was where the way it was throughout the journey. It was meeting head on with a defining event in my life and allowing me to process that out through these conversations I was having with people. It was a need to talk and a need to connect with, what's the best way to say it? It was an opportunity to discover who I am, honestly, and an opportunity to discover who each of they are on a very honest, true, and open level. And the one thing I was most grateful for, which I don't know if it surprised me. I think if it did surprise me, it's only because at the beginning of this journey, I was a very closed person who didn't open up emotionally. But how open and how welcoming they were to telling their own story. And I think it's because we have arrived at a place where we are defining one another according to type, and we're being sort of swallowed up. And we have this need to express who we are, because we can't be forced into pockets of people. You can't go after a particular group of people just because they are one thing. Like if you're talking about Hispanics, well, Hispanic is a group. It's not a character. It's not a description. Each person is completely individual, completely isolated in their own story, and has so much to say, to guide with, to teach. And for me, it was an opportunity to be open to learning and grieving and being a part of people's lives that I had really only known on the surface. And some of them I thought I knew quite deeply. And so to discover what their true and honest core moment stories are was the spiritual journey for me in connecting to that. Because, for instance, I went to see my friend in Cyprus, and we went to the University of Texas together. She's from Cyprus, and she moved back there after college. And I didn't know how that would go. We hadn't seen each other for 26 years. So I stayed for about 4 days. I wasn't sure how long was appropriate. But the moment she walked in the door and we saw each other and just held one another, I knew that we were reconnecting in a way that, unless I had physically put myself there, would never have happened. And this, when I know who we are with each other now, we Skype every week now, it would have been a huge loss to my life to not have this. She has opened so many doors, so many insightful doors for me, as have all of the friends that I visited. And it's the giving and the taking and that balance of who you can be for someone else, to show up for them. And not just when things are bad, show up when things just because. Mm-hmm. Go to lunch, do this, do that. In our area here, we've had a slew of deaths of people that are important to the artistic community here over the last few years. And every time it happens, everyone says, oh, yes, you know, we must get to lunch, we must do this, we must do that, we can't just show up for funerals. And I think it has spurred people on to make those kinds of choices a little bit more than they would. But that's something we don't think enough about, I don't think, and isolating ourselves, I think at times can be healthy, but there is so much life in one other human being, and just to be present with them can open your own spiritual life. I don't know how most people will define it. I'm going to say spiritual, in that that's sort of the soul part of you that stands outside of you physically, that guides you. I think that's the way I found it. I found it through 156 people who were kind enough to welcome me in, not just to their homes, but into themselves, into their families, into their grief, into everything that made them up, which allowed me not only to open myself up to them, but to open myself up to myself.
Mm. And that's my life. I know that we are all connected. That has been proven time and time again, and that everything we do affects other people. We just don't know how that's going to take shape. We hope it's in a positive way. For the most of us, we hope it's in a positive way. We know that there are people on various levels in our society who make decisions and do things that seem like they impact more and more of us, because we seem to have a vested interest in the outcome, and sometimes we don't like the decisions that are made or the actions that are taken and so on and so forth, and yet we feel like there's nothing we can do. And yet what I have experienced in my brief existence here on this planet is that there is a whole lot more that we can do than we think. Mm. And you have done something that I have to say, I think first of all, it's really cool, because you are traveling all over the world and you are experiencing diverse cultures, let alone connecting with these 156 friends of yours. And I have a sneaking suspicion, Sara, that it's gone way past 156. As you're and in your travels, I'm sure you actually added maybe hundreds, if not thousands, of friends who are genuine people. I think that the one thing that I think concerns a lot of folks as well in this, you know, social media age is, you've heard this phrase, let's say someone passes and a close friend or relative will come up and say, "And if you need anything, you just let me know, whatever it is you need."
Sure.
Which is usually just sort of, you know, a thing to say.
Yeah.
And it's not that they don't mean it, but they'd be hard pressed to fulfill if it came, push came to shove. But they want to say something in that respect. And so I have to wonder, in this experience, if you were in need, if you were needing help in some fashion, would you be able to call on these folks? Do you feel within yourself, and this is not judging them in any way, but do you feel like you would be able to go to many of them and say, "Hey, I'm in need of whatever it is, and I'm wondering if you could help me"?
Oh, absolutely. It's happened since then. Absolutely. Mm. And it's extraordinary, again, and you say picking up people along the road, the people that you don't expect to show up for you. It's not that they say, "Oh, yes, like you just said, let me know if there's anything I can do." They just knock on the door and they're there. And you open the door and you think, wow, if I could have expected anyone, it would not have been you. They're there because you've impacted them in some way, and now they're impacting you in kind. But yes, I've reached out to several of them and said, "I need to get away. I need to do this." And they say, "Well, we're here for this week. You're more than welcome to come then. If I'm not here, the house is yours." Just things like that.
Nice.
And I think a lot of it has to do with trust. And I don't think you can, I can't, let's speak for myself, I can't honestly say I trust someone I have never been present with. So I think in being sort of flesh to flesh with someone, you and knowing who they are and taking the time to understand who they are, there is a trust there that doesn't die unless you break it. And so we have sort of a trust tribe of people, and it connected other people together too, which was what the wonderful thing was. There were a group of us that went to UT Austin together, and we're all sort of scattered around the country all over the place. But some of them live in the same city. And so I would go to see one and say, well, you do know so-and-so lives here as well. So we'd have lunch together. And then since I've left, they've kept in contact with one another. You know, sometimes you just need someone to make a dinner reservation for you. You know, it's a prompting thing. So it's brought them together as well without me having to be there with them. I, you know, sort of breezed through after a week or a month, depending on how long I was in certain places. But that those friendships that can be immediate are now immediate, which is wonderful. Hmm.
Extraordinary. I have to say this is certainly reminiscent of a gentleman who used to travel the country in a motorhome and to do interviews and talk with people along the road. And Charles Kuralt was his name. Oh. And something that I actually aspire to do myself in the context of this radio broadcast, of trying to meet people who are wanting to meet people who are out there doing the kind of work that even that you are doing. To foster community more so than what we have today, and especially in this day and age, in this time period, where our society is so fractured.
Yes.
It's really kind of sad in a way, because there's an author by the name of James Redfield who wrote The Celestine Prophecy many years ago. I've read it. And in it, he talks about us, and I've been sharing this for the last few months, talking about the fact that each one of us has messages for the other.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
But I'll tell you, when you put up the shields, as I like to say, those messages can neither get in or out. And then we deny ourselves the opportunity of helping someone else to fill in the empty spaces of that puzzle they're working on. And we're also denying ourselves the opportunity to fill in some of the empty spaces of the puzzle we're working on.
Exactly.
And trying to understand. So I think maybe it's best summarized by one of the titles of your one of your chapters. We're in the midst of what you have started, I believe you have, called the Friendship Revolution.
Yes.
And we really need that. And to understand, yes, you were, I think, quite eloquent in describing what friendship is now, what a friend is today, as opposed to, you know, maybe in my parents' day as they were growing up and in their married lives and so forth. And here we are, again, in the technological 21st century, and we're meeting people. And before we go to break, I want to find out if you had any experiences along the way in that year that were maybe shocking, you know, shocking / appalling, or, oh my gosh, I cannot believe, you know, what I'm hearing, what I found, what I see in maybe connecting with one of these folks. Was there ever a reaction, or were they all pretty darn positive?
They were all positive, all positive. I think the only the surprises, I don't think there were any shocks in terms of the one-on-one friendships. Mm-hmm. The surprises, I think, were in how long you know someone does not necessarily mean that they are the person that you will open up to most easily. Mm-hmm. We're all in our own, on our own journey with our own set of circumstances and in different places in our lives. Of course, everyone was at a different place when I visited them. So it surprised me that perhaps someone that, like my friend in Cyprus that I hadn't seen for so long, it was so easy to sit down at the table and to gush everything out, because there was just a feeling of mutual place, understanding of, like you say, those messages and footprints of communication that we had perhaps laid all those years ago that opened us up to connecting in that moment. And that someone I had known for a long time, it was beautiful to be around them, and I was so thankful to be able to spend as much time. But it confused me at the time as to why I wasn't able to open up. And I think it was because I held her opinion of me in such a high regard that I thought perhaps I might disappoint, which held back me opening up my own truth to her. So it was a learning for me about the importance I held for what people thought of me, which opened up a whole nother discussion. But that was the only sort of surprising moment that I found.
It's, and again, I think that these types of journeys are not only extraordinary, but what I'm kind of getting is that for each one of us, we all have to decide on our own, but it just seems like, wow, this seems like something that we as individuals, we need to do. You know, back in the 60s, it used to be where, you know, the young kid says, oh, I'm not going to college. I'm going to go out and find myself. And I think today the phrase might be, no, I'm not going to go to college. I'm going to go out and find the rest of myself, so to speak. Find the connection that makes me who I am through the people that I have, again, maybe touched base with through social media. And again, I could continue to use the phrase Facebook, but there are all different kinds of social media platforms that are out there that are kind of doing the same thing. Twitter's one of them, and then there are others as well. And maybe it's because I haven't found my place in that realm to open myself up to that at this particular point in time. Maybe I will eventually. And some may say, well, gee, you're a fool not to. You know, you're missing out on so much. And I have to wonder. I will share one experience a friend of mine had in regards to Facebook. He and his wife were having dinner at a restaurant here in Santa Barbara one evening. And a gentleman out of nowhere walked up, reached out his hand to shake my friend's hand and said, hi, we're friends on Facebook. And it kind of creeped him out because he didn't remember friending this guy. And in some instances, some people have hundreds and thousands of quote unquote friends. Mm-hmm. And I sit here going, wait a minute, my definition of friend, how could you have thousands? You know, and again, I may have to, based upon what you've shared here on the program today, I may have to modify my definition.
Yeah, well, that's what I found, you know, going through. And one thing I do in the book is there are 26 definitions, different friendship quality definitions based on what I experienced with a particular person or, you know, particular people, which amalgamate into the very final one, which is an African phrase, Ubuntu, which is I am the best version of myself because of my interaction with you. I absolutely loved. And I felt that going through that everything, every kind of friendship that I had defined could be all put under that one umbrella of Ubuntu.
We're talking with Sarah Lovett. She is the author of The Invisible Bones. She's talking with us and sharing with us about this extraordinary one-year journey that she took, that she shares in this work. And we're going to get the contact information from her in just a moment. This is Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. And I hope, friend, that you will stay with us.
Pray for you, and when a
I'll still be friends with you.
Welcome back to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. We're talking with Sara Lovett, and she has an extraordinary workout. I think it would behoove you to pick up a copy of The Invisible Bones check it out. Might give you some insight if you're kind of trapped in the social media arena and can't find your way out. I'm not necessarily saying this is a way out of that, but I think it's a better way to understand it. Maybe, Sara, I think maybe to really utilize it in a manner of speaking to its fullest potential for, if I can put it in this context, for the, so to speak, the betterment of mankind, or at least the betterment of self-kind, if you will.
Yes.
Your website, by the way, is saralovett.com, correct?
That's it.
And that's S-A-R-A-L-O-V-E-T-T. .com. We encourage you to go to the website and check her out. And again, you're on Facebook, obviously.
Yes, I can be found there.
And we encourage you to go there and see what she has to offer. I think that you'll be surprised at what she has found. And The Invisible Bones is an extraordinary work. I'm curious too, and we kind of touched upon this a little bit briefly, but I'm wondering about those people who you wanted to connect with. You, in this case, 156. Did you set up all 156 contacts in that respect, or was this sort of hit and miss kind of thing? Where you, well, I'm going to go there and see if they're there. I mean, obviously, you can communicate on Facebook. Hey, I'm going to be in town next week. Between Tuesday and Thursday, can we meet on Wednesday for lunch or what have you? Mm-hmm. And did you find, was everybody there, or had some people left and, I mean, passed on?
No, everybody was there. What I did was I reached out to a few of my closest friends and said, this is what I was thinking about doing. Would they be amenable to it? And then it was a matter of figuring out the route. I didn't want to be up in the East Coast during wintertime, so I decided to go there during the summer. And so, yes, I had friends in Miami and North Carolina and Virginia. Although, no, that's Virginia. That's an interesting story. So mm-hmm. I have a friend in North Carolina, so I drove from Destin, where I went on vacation with my family, and then they came home to Dallas, and I just started my journey. So I drove to North Carolina, and then from North Carolina, the next stop that I was making on the way up was to Newport, Rhode Island, and that's a long road. So I wanted to find a place to stay in between, and I had a friend who worked for a hotel that said, yes, you know, anytime, just let me know where you are, and we'll handle it for you, which was lovely. But I'd reached out to a friend of mine, Marie, who's a choreographer, ballet dancer, and I said, you don't happen to know anybody sort of halfway, do you? And she knew these friends that she danced with in for Richmond Ballet. And so I said, well, do you think they'd mind, you know, if I just stay the night? You know, I'm not gonna stay long, you know, being English, we don't like to trouble people. So I was trying to get in and out as quickly as possible without them even knowing I was there. They said, sure, yes. And another thing that I was doing along the way was volunteering, trying to volunteer in as many different communities as possible to see how the communities gave back. And so I told them that, or she had, and it just so happened that her partner had just taken over as CEO for a company named Feedmore in Richmond. So he said, no, you should volunteer. We'll come and you can volunteer the next day. And I said, well, that means I'll have to stay another night. And they're like, no, it doesn't matter. You know, come on in. And when I drove up she was there with her arms open and hugged me like she'd known me forever, and I'd never heard of them or met them before. We sat down to cheese and vodka tonics and just talked to about 1 a.m, getting to know each other, laughing and talking and just discovering each other. From complete strangers to when I stopped back again on my way back down because they wanted me to stop for 2 or 3 more days so we could hang out some more. When I got there, she said, well, you're part of the family now. You just help yourself. So these are people that are in my life that are new friends that came out of it that I'll never, I would never have known if I hadn't gone up on that journey. But no, the appointments, I sort of reached out to everybody and said, are you open to this? And they responded, as I said, no one said no. So I said, well, this is my window. This is when I'm going to be there. And so when I was in Rhode Island, it was one of my, I have two dear friends up there. So I stayed up there longer than most other places. And I used it as a hub to go into New York. And then I took the train into New York and was able to see people there and then come back to Rhode Island again and spend a good quality time there before driving back down. But no, it all just seems to work out very well. As I said, I think timing is golden. It's when you're called to do something and you choose to answer, then it will just unfold for you. And that's how it did for me. It was perfect. It was absolutely perfect in timing. In England, when I was in England, I was supposed to come back, but in after about 5 weeks, I think, and I ended up staying, I think, around 8 weeks. Just because I could, you know, I met a new group of people. I started off in Wales when I got there on a writing course that I was taking and met new friends, as you do. And one of them was playing Prospero. He was 60 years old and he hadn't acted in ages and ages. And he was going out with Prospero, which is an amazingly huge role to tackle after an abstinence from acting and to make it your last role. So who could miss that? But that wasn't happening until later on in October. So I ended up staying, which gave me an opportunity to go up to the Lake District to get to know a dear friend of mine who lives here. She's English, but her parents lived in the Lake District, to get to know them and just to have some downtime, which was definitely needed. 2 weeks of downtime to actually process everything that I had encountered along the way, which was beautiful. But no, it all seemed to unfold naturally, the connecting and the setting up of when I would be where. There was no problem there.
When you decided to embark on this journey, was there any doubt or trepidation in that regard? I mean, my goodness, you're taking a year off, and that's not cheap. And at the same time, did you think that, okay, and when I'm done with this journey, I'm going to write the book?
No and no. let's move on. No. No, I think, you know, if you're at a point in life, there comes a point, I think, where if there's one thing missing in your life, and it will nag at you and nag at you and nag at you until you either say yes or you say no to it. And both are fine, I think. Saying no means you accept where you are and you find happiness and you pursue where you are. I had to say yes. I was at a point where the job I had was sort of sucking what was left of my happy soul out, and it wasn't who I was. And I had not lived my life to potential, and I was suppressing everything that my life could have been, and wanted to understand why I had chosen that, because I think it was a choice. It was definitely a choice. So there was no choice for me. So I quit my job. My boss was very understanding, wishing he could do it too, as you can, you know. But so, yes, I gave up my job. I stayed long enough to save up some money. I had a 401k that I cashed some of that in, sold my car, put everything in storage, and just took to the road. And I've never regretted it since. There was, like I said, it was it was a yes moment. And for me, my life could not have gone in the other direction it was going in any longer. It would have been, well, it would just have swallowed up anything that would have been aware. And I think we're all searching for the same thing, and that's to love ourselves. Mm-hmm. I think it's you have to come back to yourself to love yourself completely, so you are able to completely embrace other people. And I was not in that position. And I thought, going back to your second question about writing a book about it, I thought it would be, I blogged along the way, and I thought, I'll write about friendship. This is going to be about friendship, and yes, I'll perhaps put it into a book that is about friendship and how social media is destroying us. And I had all these ideas about what I was going to say, and even though it has elements of that, it's more of a memoir biography about my own life, a story I had to tell about myself, to say it out loud. I did not predict that at the very beginning of this. It was not certainly not what I set out to do.
How did this change you?
Oh, dramatically. At the beginning of this journey, I, like I said, I was a very closed person, very guarded person, not open at all, not able to talk about myself or my past. And now I am able to have conversations with people where I can offer some of my own life experience instead of just nodding and saying, mm-hmm, mm-hmm, and being, you know, with that person present, but, you know, not necessarily sharing my own life story. And I come to the huge conclusion, and rightly so, that I had denied my own life and suppressed my own life because of a defining event in my life, which was a pregnancy I had when I was 19 years old that I chose to not to keep, to abort. And that was not the right decision for me. It was a decision that was made, but it was not the right decision for me. And in denying that voice, I denied my own voice. And because I did not want anything positive to come out of this action that I thought was shameful, I wouldn't allow my own life to progress. So if I would get good at acting, and someone would say, "Oh, you're really good. You know, you should stop at this. You should keep going with this." Freudian, I just said, "Stop this." I would stop and change course. I wrote a novel, and someone said, "Yeah, you should really get this published." And I just threw it in a drawer for years and didn't think about it again, because I couldn't allow myself happiness after making the choice that I had done. So it led to a life unlived, really. So for me, this journey, truthfully, was retracing my steps. It was living the life I hadn't lived before. And in seeing all of these people that had been a part of those years that I had not been fully present for, to reclaim it, to reclaim those choices, to reclaim those friendships, and say what I wanted to say, and come to an understanding of who I was through those people who had. And it was interesting that we had different memories. Not that our memories were different, but that each of us remembered different things. So it enhanced my story, because I was getting memories that I'd forgotten. So it just made the picture just huge. And in the writing of the book, I write it as a conversation between myself and the child that never was, taking him along on the journey with me, to give him a life and a voice which enabled me to have my own.
Well, I know that when people embark on these kinds of journeys, there's always an impact, a transition point, and so forth. And obviously, it was from your perspective, definitely well worth it. And from ours as well, because we have this wonderful work, The Invisible Bones. And, you know, I guess I'm going to have to ask a couple of the questions that probably everybody asks. What are invisible bones?
Well, that to me is a metaphor for many different things. Friendship inside the Facebook hive, I think those are all invisible bones. We don't have any flesh physical connection. They are invisible. And obviously the invisible bones of the child that accompanied me on this journey. That's the other definition that I have for it. And for being, for absence, we are often absent for each other when we think we are being with one another, because we reach out in the most limited way. If you know someone is sick, you shouldn't send a text with three letters that say, "You okay?" You know, we should fill that space with something, be visible.
Not emojis either. I have to say that I have enough trouble typing on the screens that I have, whether it's my tablet or my phone. So I am thankful that there is a little microphone that I can tap, and I can speak what I want to say into it and then send it as a text. Yeah, and so I'm very grateful for that level of technology. Then there's also a feature in the text messaging, at least mine, where I can actually send an audio file. I can actually record an audio file and send it to whomever as well. But I find that interesting, too. And I received a text from someone just yesterday. They sent me a picture, and the photograph was of some chicks. Now, and the relevance here is because my wife and I were going to be getting back into having chickens and eggs at our place. We used to have 20, 30, 40 hens, and we were actually selling the eggs just because we couldn't eat them all fast enough. And then every text after that, it was hell trying to figure out what in the world this woman was saying. I got the picture. Okay, you've got three new chicks, and obviously your rooster's been busy. But what is the rest of this stuff? You know, I didn't, because a lot of it was just that. It was the two letters and the three letters and the one letter and the symbol this and the symbol that. Not even emojis, just symbols sometimes from the symbols keypad. And I think that, and I remember, I will tell you that I had the distinct privilege of speaking, and I consider privilege to have the opportunity to speak in front of anybody. A communications association at the University of California at Santa Barbara about 7 or 8 years ago. And they wanted me there to share my story of my career and this and that and the other thing. And I started asking questions. And one of the questions I asked them was, does anybody know what syntax is? Because my point, what I was trying to get across was that when you're writing, you have to make sure that people understand what you're saying. And there is a proper way to construct sentences, which I may not even know specifically, but I'm aware of the fact that there is. And that if you don't write it correctly in that context, that people are not going to understand what you were saying. And I related that to computer code. You put a forward slash instead of a backslash, it's not going to work. Or it's going to do something bizarre that you never expected. And I still remember the first line of DOS code that I wrote back in the mid-90s when I first got into computers. And I looked at it and I was in awe for two reasons. One was I looked at it going, wow, I wrote that. And number two was, wow, I understand what I wrote and what I want to do. But nobody knew what it was. And this, to me, is where social media has done the disservice in that regard, because we're not really communicating. And then people, you know, it's one thing when you're in conversation with someone, you and I were here in conversation, and I might say something. You know, I mean no disrespect, Sarah, but la, 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 la.
Yeah.
And then we can work it out if I've maybe crossed a line, stepped on some toes, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. But because there's no real emotion within the context of a chat or a tweet or a text message or an email. Mm-hmm. Wow, boy, things can just spin out of control.
Oh, they can, yes. And there was an article in the New York Times several years back that was talking about children, young people, and that conversation is second choice now. It's texting is the primary communication tool, and how when they are in social situations, they cannot recognize tone of voice or facial expressions.
Yeah.
It's very difficult for them. And that's disturbing to me that conversation is secondary in the generation that's coming up. I think as human animals, we are completely redefining how we live.
You're absolutely correct. And I'm hoping that we haven't gone too far in that direction to where we can sort of, you know, bring it back. I actually have come across some young people, and I'm talking who are in high school and heading into college and so forth. They actually have the attitude that they want to disconnect as much as possible, because even at their early age, they recognize the danger signs.
Well, that's good.
You know, so there are a few out there.
Yeah.
You know, and that's.
I think as the human animal, we are social. We are social mm-hmm. beings.
Yes.
And no matter how you redefine what social is,
yeah,
it's never going to take away from the truth of how we feel in one another's company.
Yeah, there is. That's why whenever I'm doing this program, I extend the invitation to them, as I do to you, Sara, that if you're ever in the Santa Barbara area, we'd love to have you in studio to continue this conversation, because the energy is so much different. It's not to say that Skype isn't good, that phone call isn't good, but they're second and third to that face-to-face eye contact and the conversation. Heck, if I could, I'd have a little fire going in the middle here, you know, as we talk around the campfire. And
that'd be perfect.
You know. I don't know about s'mores, maybe hot cocoa or something, but because I know that when I call my parents, for example, and I talk with them on the phone, and right now, unless I can catch a plane back to Phoenix, that's as close as I can get. Mm. And I embrace that, and I try to glean as much from that interplay and interchange, if you will, as I can. Mm. But there is nothing compared to the being there. And I remember an anniversary that they celebrated, and we actually were able to fly in for the day for that celebration. It was actually their 60th. Mm-hmm. It was just a year or two ago. And as we were leaving, one of my relatives said, "You have no idea how excited your mother is that you came, that you and your wife came." Because we don't make it to a lot of the gatherings back in Phoenix. Mm-hmm. And not that I wasn't aware of that. I mean, I certainly was in my interactions with her, but it was never verbally said in that way. And that just meant so much. It's like, wow. And we actually surprised them one year through my four sisters. I have four sisters. I communicated with them saying, "Look, we're going to fly in. We want you to take mom and dad down to this specific restaurant. We will meet you all there and surprise them." For the first time in my life with my four sisters, they all were able to keep the secret for about a month. But it was a great time. My mother and father were ecstatic. Very surprised, glad to see us. We spent the afternoon with them before we flew back. But those are the kinds of exchanges, interactions that we would love to foster. And you've done that in spite of all of the, I'm going to say the traps, okay, mm-hmm. of social media. You managed to circumnavigate all of those traps and turn it into real human interaction.
Yes. And anyone can do it. You don't have to do it necessarily to the scale that I did, but you can make a commitment to one friend you haven't seen and go to Alaska because you can.
Yeah.
You know, and see what that is. If the path leads there, go.
Why only a year? Why a year? Why was that the time frame that you set up?
I think the honest answer to that is I've no idea. I was coming from a corporate background, so I was still goal driven, which I have since let go of. So I thought, well, give yourself a time frame. It can't just hang on and on and on and on, which I think was good in the long run because it kept people to a scale, to a schedule. And also, I think it was helpful because it's a year. And years go by and go by and go by. And for 365 days, I remember every single day, perhaps not every moment of it, but I remember each day that I lived for that year completely. And I cannot say that about any other year of my life. And I think making it just that period of time was manageable and impactful on me in putting my whole life into perspective. You know, Gandhi said, my life is my message. Well, if my life is my message, I have to look at what I'm doing, what I'm saying. And I have to have a sort of a, well, not a box to put it in, but a frame. That's a better metaphor, a frame I can put that in. And that ended up to be a year of my life. Mm.
Extraordinary. The Invisible Bones, Sarah Lovett is my guest, and we've been talking here for the last hour about this experience of hers that can be yours as well if you choose to do so. And I think rightly so, Sarah, you put it quite well. It doesn't have to be a year. It doesn't have to be 156 people. You know, it can be, you know, whatever you want it to be. And so, you know, go out and do it. What have you got to lose? I mean, actually, you've got a lot to gain, because if you were to map out 10 friends or 110 or 156, like Sarah did, hey, you're going to come back with 156,000 maybe. Who knows? I mean, it's one of the extraordinary things that I look forward to. And when my wife and I traveled north to Nevada City here in California on our our week-long vacation through Yosemite, I said, we're going to do the best we can to eat healthfully, but we're not going to eat at any fast food. I want to eat at like the diners, those kinds of things, the different restaurants, that kind of thing, if we don't eat in our room. And I want to experience the people.
Yes. The community.
Yeah. And that's what you've done. And I'm real excited in that regard. And again, I thank you so much for allowing us to enter into that world of yours.
Well, thank you, Richard. It's been lovely. I've appreciated it.
I'm talking with Sarah Lovett, and we are fast approaching our time together. But as I mentioned, would love to have you in studio if you ever find yourself out here in Santa Barbara. We'd love to do that. And then also have three final questions that I would like to ask you as we wrap up our program. And again, thanking you so much for the time that you've shared with us. First question is, who is Sarah Lovett?
Oh, good God. Do we have another hour?
Well, let me see here. Just maybe.
I'm not that vain. I'm a joyful, happy person that looks for the best in everything in my life.
What is it that you hope to or want to achieve through the work that you're doing now?
Oh. I think to be able to share the experience of how I was able to come to a point of truth in my own story and opening up and standing up and saying, this is who I am, this is my story, to be able to extend that courage to anyone that I meet. Because we each need to know who the other is in order for us to understand ourselves as a collective.
And finally, what is your life's purpose?
I think it's to continue to love myself so that I'm able to love everyone else from a place of non-judgment and understanding, and to listen, to follow, and to guide whenever those moments present themselves, and to know the difference.
Well, again, I want to thank you so much for taking time to share with us and encourage people to go to your website, which is saralovett.com. That's S-A-R-A, and then again, L-O-V-E-T-T.com. And we're going to link to your website as well, and so people can find you. And really, an extraordinary journey that any one of us can take, and it's one that I would love to take. I do envy you your journey, because again, it's something that we're hoping to do in the not too distant future with this radio program as well, and. You know, we'll see who we meet and what we experience, and that's really what it's all about in this life, is to connect with people. I've often said that if the good Lord had intended for each of us to live on individual planets, I'm sure there are enough out there in the universe for each one of us, even at 7.5 to 8 billion people, that there are individual planets for each one of us. But guess what? We're here together, and so we're here together to try to make the best of what we have and make what we have better than it was. So again, Sara, thank you so much.
Thank you.
I'm Richard Dugan. This has been Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. We're giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Until next time, love Talal.